Department of Transport. SAMSA and the Port Regulator of South Africa. We will start with SAMSA Committee Secretary's indicating that they've requested to start first because they must also go to the National Assembly Portfolio Committee. We are going to start with introductions and apologies. My name is Mandla Rayi, spelled R-A-Y-I. I'm the chairperson of the SILEC Committee on Economic and Business Development. The committee is also responsible for six other departments other than the Department of Transport. And then 31 entities, SAMSA and the PRSA as the two entities out of 31 entities that we deal with every Tuesday. So it's your turn today. Last week we dealt with the other two entities from the Department of Labor, NEDLAC and the Compensation Fund. The Compensation Fund is not an entity as such. It's part of the Department of Labor. I'm going to now allow honorable members to introduce themselves, starting with the chair.
Good morning. My name is Eddie Makua, and I come from the province that's making extensive use of your services, and that's Gauteng.
Morning, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. My name is Jacques Lund, and I'm here from the Western Cape.
Thank you, Chair. Morning. My name is Boimod Lontebe. I'm part of the committee.
Assalamu alaikum. My name is Dr. Vauda, and I'm a fighter from Mpumalanga.
Good morning, I'm Mr. Rasmus from Parliament.
Good morning, honourable members. I am Tado Zawuze. I'm a member of the Port Regulator of South Africa. I've been requested by my chairman, Mr. Thabang Mofumahadi, to represent him and to share his apology with you as he's out of the country. Thank you.
Morning, members. Chosen Mshonga from the Port Regulator. I'm the CFO. Apologies for my CEO. He'll be in a few minutes just trying to find parking outside.
Good morning, committee members and colleagues from Sports Regulator. My name is Lucy September. I'm from SAMHSA. I'm in the Office of the Chief Operations Officer. I would also like to register his apology. He might be joining us a bit late. He was held up in Pretoria this morning, but he will be joining the other meeting here as a judge.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Morning, Chair, honorable members, colleagues from the Port Regulator. I'm Lolo Rapadu. I'm from SAMHSA, the company secretary. Firstly, the chairperson of the board, Mr. Mavuso Msimang, requested me to tender apology on his behalf. He had prior commitments that he could not get out of. And secondly, I also want to put it on record that we do not have the CEO. We're still waiting for the direction and the decision from the shareholder on that aspect. Thanks.
We don't have a CEO.
We do not.
Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, colleagues from the Port Regulator. My name is Phumlani Myeni. I'm the Chief Financial Officer at SAMHSA.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Mervyn Burton, and I'm a board member on SAMHSA's board. I'm also the chair of the audit committee.
Mahesh Fakir, CEO of the Port Regulator.
Morning, honorable. My name is Mchunzi Madia, acting DDG Maritime from the Department of Transport.
Everybody introduce yourself.
Good morning, everybody. Ismail Hussain from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Thank you very much. We have an apology from the minister. Is attending the inquiry on some call it state capture. Others call it a corporate governance, inquiry on corporate governance. So it can't be with us. I'm just summarizing the apology. I think the apology for Honorable Dikhale, I'll have a copy, the letter in front of me. But Thabang has also tendered the apology on behalf. There's also an apology for Honorable Makwebu. He won't be attending the meeting this morning. So those are the apologies. Honorable
Chairperson, I would appeal that we stick to our rule, which is that only written apologies are accepted.
Summarizing here, sorry. I'm just worried about SAMHSA. We have a principal decision that we took this committee. And such there are entities that could not come here because we have a principal that says the chairperson of the board and the CEO must be present. We can have as many board members as possible, but the chairperson and the CEO must be present. I accepted the explanation by Port Regulator. There is a board member that is present on behalf of the chairperson. The CEO is also here. But in the case of SAMHSA, I don't know if the audit chair is a board member as well. You are a board member. Okay. So, but the issue of CEO, I think, I don't know if you say you're from the department. CDC. From the department.
Honorable, I'm from the department as well as I'm a board member, shareholder representative on the SAMHSA board. Yeah, I serve two portfolios.
Can you explain the issue of the CEO?
Our understanding as a department, you are supposed to be present today, and I'm also aware that they've got a slot on the state capture accession that SAMHSA needs to report on. I'm not sure if the members of SAMHSA can attest to that, but our expectation was for the CEO to be present in this committee.
So that, the way you put it, I was of the impression that there's no CEO at all.
Thank you, Chair. The former CEO of SAMHSA resigned in June 2016, and after his departure the board appointed the COO as acting CEO, and the SAMHSA Act only makes provision for one to act for a maximum of 12 months, and he did up until May 2017. And in December last year, after the board had embarked on a recruitment drive, conducted interviews, a recommendation was made to the shareholder minister with regard to the appointment of the CEO. I think while the process was still rolling, there were quite a few disturbing issues that were forwarded through to the shareholder minister with regard to the suitability of the recommended candidate. And in that process, the shareholder requested the board to investigate and provide a full report with regard to the allegations that were made against the acting CEO. The board did, and a full report was made available to the shareholder minister with regard to the recommended candidate. And we haven't received any feedback yet. And because the SAMHSA Act doesn't make provision for one to act in excess of 12 months, the board felt or was anticipating that the appointment will be made sooner, before the expiration of that 12-month period. And that's where we are currently. So, like I said before, Chair, we do not have a CEO, nor do we have an acting CEO.
Members?
If I can also add, Chair, for officials, is easy. I can get a phone call today and be instructed that I should be in Parliament tomorrow. I'll do it because that's my job, and that's what I do Monday to Friday. But it's a different ball game when it comes to board members. They have prior commitments, and some of them they can't get out of. Some of them they can if they get notification in time. In this case, we got the notification of today's proceedings last week, and we get instructions from the shareholder department, and we only got notification last week, and after receiving it I notified the board chairperson to say, this is the program, will your diary be able to accommodate it? And he came back, he said, I did my best but I can't, that's why he's not here today. And he, anyway, I have a letter from him that I'll reveal to the chair. He's one of the panel of 9 members who were appointed to oversee the appointment of the service provider with SASA. And they have a special committee meeting today which he could not get out of. And that's why he could not avail himself today, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. The reason I'm asking members if perhaps they need to say something on this issue, the challenge also I had with regard to SAMHSA was that one, we don't have the annual report in the form of a book. We have now the presentation which was sent yesterday, but we don't have the book that was tabled in Parliament. That's one part, and when I check with my secretary, I ask my secretary to organize me the book. You know, for example, the Ports Regulator has this annual report of police in their book form. In addition to that, we have the presentation. So that is a norm. Then I asked the secretary to organize me the annual report. She checked with the person in Parliament who's responsible for that. But the person instead sent him an ATC. The ATC contains the report of the Portfolio Committee on Transport, the BRRR. In the BRRR, the Portfolio Committee says that they list a number of entities that they could not deal with because those entities did not table their annual report. So the report, the BRRR report, went to the National Assembly without indicating the state of affairs of the three entities of the Department of Transport. One of the entities is SAMHSA. So up to date, even on their website, there is no annual report. On the last annual report was 2015-2016. So we don't have 2016-2017. I'm not sure about the issue of being notified last week. It could be that it's a problem of the department. Because I was assured by the committee secretary that the notice was sent to the program, was sent a long time ago. but I think it's a matter that we must take up with the minister. We have to write to the minister because we have had these challenges with the entities of the Department of Transport. They becoming well. Let me give you the chance before then the members express their
Thank you, Chair. I also want to bring it to your attention that we had a few challenges at SAMHSA to a point where we were unable to avail the annual report at the stipulated, regulated, and legislated time. And our submission was late, and we haven't yet tabled our annual report. That is why it's not also available on our website yet. So we're still awaiting tabling. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Makoyo, you had your hand up.
I thought I heard you saying Makoyo and I'm looking very thank you very much, sir. We hear and I concur with you that this is a recurring problem with the Department of Transport. Last year, in my capacity as chair, I had to write a letter to the minister to complain about the way that the department is responding to the request from the committee.
and I'm speaking particularly to the gentleman who's from the department, that the expectation of Parliament is that members of the executive should be here, even when we have the entities reporting to us. If, however, the chairperson of the board is here, then we can understand when the executive is not here. But in this case, we have neither of them here. That's point one. Point two, Chair, is related to the original matter that you have raised about the question of the apologies. If it is that the chairperson is attending the SASA meeting, one can understand that in terms of urgency. But then the gentleman has said that he had a letter that he is going to share with the chairperson. Maybe, Chair, you need to get that letter now so that you can then also guide the meeting properly if you have the letter and is familiar with its contents. But to say respectfully to both SAMHSA and also to the colleagues from the other entity that the expectation of the committee is that we will have the CEO, and if the chairperson of the board can't be here, members of the board. But then we would always prefer to have a written apology on file because we have to be accountable as well. And our responsibility as parliamentarians is to make sure that you function properly with the public funds that have been allocated to you. Just my final point on the matter would be, Chair, to say that from what I have heard thus far, it looks like SAMHSA is not in a very good space at the moment. And I want to register our concern on the fact that they're not in a good space, and would want to say, Chair, that before the conclusion of this meeting, it might be necessary, I think not might, it is necessary for us as members of this select committee to communicate to the board of SAMHSA that we are not happy with the space in which they find themselves. And they must give us an indication as to what time frames they as a board have set in order to deal with the present challenges within the entity. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Before Honourable Tebe, let me just so that perhaps you can also take the content of the letter into account. This email was sent to the to the company secretary, Mr. Khab. Is it Kha or Ra?
In my case, it's a Ra.
Oh,
thank you, Chair.
All right. That's why I had to establish it. Because in my case, it's Kha. Okay. Mr. Rawagin, kindly convey my apologies to the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee for my inability to attend the committee meeting tomorrow together with SAMHSA delegation. As you may be aware, I am on the panel of experts were appointed by the Constitutional Court to monitor the implementation by SASA of the order of the court with regards to the distribution of social grants to designated beneficiaries. The next meeting of the panel has been called for tomorrow morning at 10 at the Auditor General's office in Johannesburg. I was particularly keen to attend, especially as I have not been able to do so since my appointment more than 2 years ago. I do not wish to give the impression of being disrespectful to the Portfolio Committee, a very important organ of Parliament and the Constitution. I have to say in mitigation of my absences that short notices regularly given to SAMHSA by Department of Transport do not help the situation of people like myself who have to do consulting work to earn a living. I was also keen to use the opportunity of our appearance to inform the Portfolio Committee how, after stabilizing the board during the past 2 years, the institution is now at risk of having its functionality and operation compromised. It is more than a year now since the board made its recommendation to the Minister for the appointment of the CEO by Cabinet. The public promises were made by the Minister that the position of CEO will be filled soon have come to nothing. We also face a similar situation with respect to board appointments. Two members of our 6-person board reached the end of their term of office about 5 months ago. The Minister was duly notified of this in advance of the end of their term of office. Again, no action has been taken. This is seriously impeding the proper functioning of the board. Any assistance that SAMHSA can receive in this regard will be highly appreciated. So that is a letter from the chairperson. Honorable Ntek.
No, earlier, Chair, before you read the letter, I was going to suggest a different way of resolving this. Can I suggest, Chair, we have two. It might be the best of time, but it might also be the worst of time for us. The best of time is that this might be an opportune moment for us to be able to zoom in and have tangible resolutions to the issues that are impacting negatively on SAMHSA. The worst might be that we might allow them to go back and we might lose the opportunity for us to be able to intervene. But the practicality is that it might be, and DDG, probably you lead us because you are also a representation of the shareholder. In this case, you are also mentioning that board members also, some, the term has lapsed, that no appointment has been done. So probably, Chair, from where I'm sitting, I think we might not do justice after reading your letter. To the current challenges facing SAMHSA now, through your indulgence, of course, can we look into the program and in the immediate try to get hold of the Minister and the board in totality so that we can understand what are the issues that are impacting negatively on SAMHSA. Members, in terms of their fiduciary responsibility, but also the shareholder in terms of the role that he needs to play in the whole thing. From where I'm sitting, I mean, we're sitting with SAMHSA which can't even produce an annual report. And here before us, they are going to present an annual report that has not followed the proper processes. So what is the status of what we're going to be getting? So that's my submission, Chair, that probably through you, please try to get the pathway to the Minister. Let's get the Minister. Let's try to see what we can be able to do. But also the board, separate from the shareholder, must be able to find its way to the committee. Thank you, Chair.
And any other contributions? Honorable Father?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I listened to Honorable Makue and to Honorable Ntebe from where he is sitting on my left, as he said. But, Chairperson, I concur with him. You know, to hear that the annual report is only a year now to table to us, with all the other issues, I have to agree with Honorable David on that. Not that we agree on a lot, but this time I do agree.
Honorable Maku.
Chair, I just wanted to amend slightly the proposal from Honorable Tebe, and I hope Honorable Faber will agree with me, that I'm also adding to that, Chair, that you as Chair meet with the Chair of the Portfolio Committee,
yeah,
and we take combined action on the matter.
Yeah, it does. I think that's what you must also clarify as well, maybe entities, that Parliament is made up of two houses, the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces. Both of them have committees. A committee of the National Assembly is called Portfolio Committee. A committee of the National Council of Provinces is called the Select Committee. I'm sure it's because also you're supposed to appear before the Portfolio Committee. So this letter should have been written. This should have been, but this one is in that, is also sent to the committee secretary to convey the apology on behalf of the chairperson. But if this could be clarified also to the board members, that they should know that there are two houses as well. So I see also even the presentation there. It says Portfolio Committee on Transport presentation. It should say presentation to the Select Committee on Economic and Business Development. As I was indicating that this committee has six departments and 31 entities. So you don't name it according to your department. You name it according, because it's a cluster of departments. So it's called the Select Committee on Economic and Business Development. So we're not going to, you're not going to give us a presentation now, because we want the presentation that is based on the annual report in the book form. Because I also decided to have a look at the annual report of 2015-16. There are a lot of issues that are raised there by AG. Lot of issues that raised by AG in that report, issues of irregular expenditure, fraudulent and wasteful expenditure, issues that relate to performance information. In this presentation that we received yesterday, there's no reference to the AG report, which is always the case with the PowerPoint presentation. They just do the highlights. Positive highlights. They never touch on the AG reports and the issues that are raised. I mean, even with other departments and entities. It's only when there's a clean audit becomes the first sight. But if it's not, there's no clean audit, you don't even know that there's a clean audit or no clean audit. It's not even in the presentation. So the next meeting that we will have with SAMHSA, we will make sure that the minister is present, the board chairperson is present. I'm not sure then about the CEO, because they say you don't have a CEO. What we'll do first, we'll just tie the minister to a date, agree on a date with him when the Select Committee is going to meet with SAMHSA. And that must then be communicated to SAMHSA. The date that we agree on must be communicated to SAMHSA so that everybody is present in that particular meeting. So that even the issues that are raised here with regard to the recommendation for the appointment of the CEO, the replacement of board members could also be the issue. It's a matter that I will also raise with the minister that when he comes to brief the committee, he must also talk to these issues that are raised in the letter as well. For now, we'll then excuse you and deal with the water regulator. Honorable Mako.
Chairperson, if you will allow me to just practically demonstrate to SAMHSA how your situation impacts on our country. Will you allow me to do that, Chair? We are, thank you, Chair. We are participating at the end of this year in a meeting of the World Trade Organization in Buenos Aires. Part of the difficulty that we have as the continent is getting continental value, particularly within the agricultural sector. And fisheries, as you know, if you look at the lakes in West Africa, you also look at the sea around us, has become a very important element of our negotiations in the WTO. We had a meeting yesterday, Chairperson, where the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries did a wonderful presentation on particularly how we deal with the question of the fishery, the fishing industry, and the fishermen here in the Western Cape. There are no women. There are some women. No, let me be careful. There are women. But the industry is under threat by two things. The one is overfishing, and the other one is the people harvesting the fish, benefiting themselves, rather than multinational companies being the only beneficiaries. So we're looking at legislation, but we're looking at what do we take to the WTO. Now, if I look at your report, you are talking about the merchant ships, you are talking about Operation Pakisa, and these things are important for us to take to the WTO. Now that we haven't had the opportunity to engage with you, our hands are tied. We can't take it. And we are saying that the situation of fluidity within SAMHSA at the moment is adversely affecting the poor people of the country. And it's also having a serious adverse effect on our international trade negotiations. And I think I'm mentioning that so that the board notes it and in that spirit realize or recognize that we are raising these concerns with you and also second the position of the chairperson that we must have the report here with us because it impacts quite significantly on our lives as South Africans and also as citizens of the continent. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Committee, Command Secretary for the Ministry Committee.
Thank you, Chair. If I can just highlight a few aspects on what has already been put on the table. I think the problem here is, or rather, if I may propose going forward, is we, as SAMHSA together with the Shiola Department, be given enough time to brief the committee on activities, especially with regard to the maritime sector. On the issues that have been raised, for number one, the issue of fisheries, and two, on how you link up the entire countries with access to the coast and also the lakes. Just to sum up, SAMHSA, representing South Africa at the IMO, has been very instrumental, especially on the continent, with regard to the role that they play or the role that we play in the maritime sector. To a point where the African countries from Liberia down to Mozambique ended up forming what we call AMAC. And South Africa appointed as a secretariat of that body with the blessing of the shareholder minister.
All right. Can I stop there?
Oh, thank you.
I think the chair was, Honorable Makwo was raising this issue so that when the new come again, you must take those issues into account. Know that you must now report to those issues.
Noted, sir.
I'll go to release you now, and so that then regulators can take the platform and present. But as that, members, we just break that for 5 minutes whilst they're sorting out the issue of presentation. And in the meantime, you can have tea and coffee, just 5 minutes.
Thank you. you when you could have done both of them or two times already.
That's why you were all over the channel.
Did you know that?
Would you like us to take you through the entire presentation that we have presented today before the members. The chairperson is not in the head, so we have to do everything. Thank you so much, chairperson and honorable members. For me, really, it is to thank the committee for extending invite to us to share our report and to give an overview of the work of the Ports Regulator of South Africa in terms of the economy of our country. The Ports Regulator aims to reduce the cost of doing business with South Africa, as well as to reduce cost of exporting South African manufactured products to the world through a fair and well-structured tariff, which goes through a well-publicized tariff process. In 2016-2017 financial year, we saw the publication of the regulator's second multi-year tariff methodology, which we use when we review the tariff of the Transnet National Ports Authority, or the National Ports Authority as the Act refers to them. The tariff process continued its open and public approach, conducting public hearings for both the tariff methodology as well as the tariff determination around South Africa at key centers. And our delivery targets have been met for the last financial year, and we exceeded the past year, and the regulator has achieved a clean audit for the third time, improving on our consistent unqualified status from previous years. In the years ahead, the regulator intends to expand its role in the transformation and the participation of the sector, whilst continuing its analytical and compliance work with the aim of enhancing enhancing our port regulatory capability. We are supposed to be a 12-member board. We are currently sitting at 9, but we have reported this to the to the shareholder minister. But we are able to continue our work, and we are able to execute the mandate that has been put and placed before us. I think, Chair, that will be a highlight of the port regulator. So I can now hand over to our CEO, Mr. Mahesh Fakir, who will be taking you through our performance information. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'm always excited when a committee reads through our documents and is able to add value and contribute to the work that we're doing, and I look forward to the engagement in that regard. I think to take you through our vision and mission, I assume that everybody has a presentation. We want to be regarded nationally and internationally as a world-class institution, which sets the standard for economic regulation in our commercial maritime ports. Our mission relates directly to the objectives of the Ports Regulator in the Act, and that is to exercise economic regulation of the ports, South African port system, consistent with government strategic objectives, to support the development of the port industry and the port system, and this is again commercial ports, to promote equity of access to ports and to facilities and services provided in ports, and to monitor the activities of the National Ports Authority to ensure that it performs its functions in accordance with the National Ports Act 12 of 2005. So that's very briefly what we do have as our stated vision and mission within the annual report. I'm aware that this session is about annual report. So if I move along to the annual performance review, as you've heard from our regulator member, Sato Sause, we have actually performed well, and we've achieved for the first time last year all the performance targets that we set out to achieve. The performance is broken down into a number of divisions that we have within the organization, and that is firstly the corporate services division, then about the economic regulation section, the industry development section, and then lastly our legal and tribunal section. So it's basically the four sections that we'll be looking at.
Firstly, if you look on page 4, then we start off with the actual performance of the corporate services section. I'm going to not read line by line or each word, but just tell you about each of the blocks as such. The review of policies within the section on IT, finance, and HR policies, those have been achieved. Filling of funded vacant posts, we are a very small organization, under 20 people. We do battle for funds, etc., and then the filling of the two posts became an important thing. We've achieved that. Organizational performance itself being monitored and reported to the regulator had been achieved. On the next page, page 5, employee performance reviews being conducted. The very important one is below that, the new funding model implementation. Remember a while ago, I think in 2015, we presented a new funding model to the Department of Transport, which says that we shouldn't rely merely on fiscal funding, but we should some of the costs of regulation should be borne by the industry itself, and that should come out of port charges, and so that the we ask for a very small percentage, I think 0.5% of the revenue allowed to the National Ports Authority to be dedicated for regulation. That new funding model, of course, was presented at the portfolio committee. It was agreed to. It was then sent to the department to take forward because it requires an amendment to the current legislation to be able to get that kind of funding. The current law, the National Ports Act, restricts us to only fiscal funding, so it required an amendment for that. But in essence, we've done our part of the work on that, and so we've recorded it as such. The next part onwards deals with our targets for economic regulation itself. The first one deals with the tariff decision and the publication of the record of decision. That was achieved. In fact, we did it in record time. In previous years, we published it in either February or March, but we achieved last year for the first time to publish it on the 1st of December. So that gives more certainty to industry. It gives them more time to prepare for adjustments in tariffs and to take that forward into their business cycles. The next one was to publish a tariff methodology for implementation in 2018-19, tariff year. So this was achieved. It is the second multi-year tariff methodology that the regulator has done since its inception. The next page deals with the tariff strategy. Now, I'm sure you all know that we published in July 2015 the country's first tariff strategy to reform the port sector over a period of 10 years. So you would know that our tariffs generally in some instances are very high compared to other tariffs in the world. Some are pretty low. So this was the tariff strategy was about re-slicing the cake, as it were, into a more logical cost-reflective system. So that previously, I think in the old days, it worked on ad valorem systems and that prices for different things in a port were based on the price of the goods themselves rather than the infrastructure. And this is a port infrastructure company that we regulate. So the part of the tariff strategy, so it was about the implementation of the tariff strategy. And part of that was to address issues of cross-subsidy. So whilst we move towards a cost-reflective tariff, we also say we are supposed to regulate in the strategic interests of the country and government strategic objectives. So we are creating what we'd call a tariff, port tariff incentive scheme, right, a program. Now that program itself looks at the exceptions rather than the rules. What is it that we want to incentivize besides the cross, addressing cross subsidies? And the other part of the tariff strategy that we then embarked on was the valuation of assets, of the National Ports Authority assets, and the first phase of that was completed. So the next page, page 8 we are on. Research projects, besides decisions being a product of this organization, we also produce knowledge and research about the port system. We study it so that we can make better decisions later. So we've basically achieved two major studies. One is the global tariff comparator study, so in which we compare a sample of ports around the world with our prices and their prices and see how we are doing, because as a country we must know whether we're competitive or not, and if we don't do this, nobody knows whether we're making progress or we are becoming more and more uncompetitive in the world. The other one was the to conduct valuation of the regulatory asset base, and so we've done that. On the next page is our industry development section, engaging with stakeholders. We have multiple engagements with the public. So this section actually does all the stakeholder engagements with the road shows as well as the PCCs. The PCCs and the NPCC, for your information, is that within the Ports Act, being an act produced after the inception of democracy in our country, it was passed in 2005. So what it does is it democratizes the port system. So each port has a committee of different role players, whether it's freight forwarders, shipping lines, etc. So each commercial port in our country has this port consultative committee, which is a PCC. And then they get together as the NPCC, the National Ports Consultative Committee, and can directly speak to the Minister of Transport about issues within the port system. So, and of course the Department of Transport has the NPCC. So the Ports Act allows for that kind of democratic committee to be created as a statutory committee besides the Ports Regulator and the National Ports Authority within the Act. Okay, so we engage with that as an observer, and we write reports to the department, and of course we arrange many more public events on the tariffs, the determination of the tariffs. We ask for public consultations and written submissions to the regulator on the tariffs. The next item there was to the research report that the industry development section produced, and that was the report on the performance of the port. So remember, the one report deals with pricing of our ports compared to other countries. This one dealt with the performance of our ports compared to other countries. And of course, all of these reports are published on our website and freely available to anyone who wants to see them. I'm looking at page, the next page, page 10. So, the next one deals more with our legal section, and that's monitoring of compliance with the National Ports Act by the National Ports Authority itself. The first item there deals with the DOT's amendments and tracking the amendments that we have recommended, and that section actually had to deal with that. Compliance findings against the authority in terms of anything that they may not have done in accordance with the Act. The next one deals with the BBBE compliance and compliance with by the port system as a whole through the National Ports Authority with the BBBE codes, and we've reported on that. Operating an effective tribunal system, the part of the work of the ports regulator that members of the regulator do is to sit on tribunal dealing with complaints against the authority and appeals against the authority's decision. And so there have been a number of hearings. You will find the details of that as well on our website. Lastly, to ensure good governance of the organization, and you know, the sort of thing that the company secretary does is to ensure, you know, that we comply in terms of the checklist and that we are audited accordingly. So I think page 12 then gives you an idea that we have achieved the targets there. So I think just quickly running through a summary of the achievements on page 13. From an organizational and financial point of view, we've filled in vacant posts. We achieved a clean audit for the third time, as was mentioned. We exceeded the BBB procurement targets. We achieved 100% of all performance plan targets, and this has been audited. Training for staff members on regulatory as well as statutory training on SEM, supply chain management, and other courses. On the governance, legal, and tribunal part, the oversight of litigation in respect of tribunal decisions that had been taken on review, together with one matter that was partly heard with an interim order issued for that current year. BBB reporting format was amended and provided to the Ports Authority to report in terms of that, resulting in a more accurate reflection of transformation in the port sector. Compliance monitoring reports for all ports were completed and validated. And in terms of the Act, the first Section 30, brackets 5 report was issued. That section also ensured governance stability in terms of quarterly reporting and governance training implemented, was implemented. Legal advice was given to the Minister regarding two Section 79 requests, and we achieved in that year a high degree of regulator member training, judicial training, governance training, as well as regulatory training. On the industry development section, on page 14, the industry development, the stakeholder feedback surveys. We do feedback forms for a lot of our roadshows and the meetings that are held in the major port cities as well as Johannesburg. And the feedback indicate an overall average score of around 80% for the regulator with respect to neutrality, independence, efficiency, and effectiveness, and acceptance of the regulated decision. So this is basically to the industry section, industry stakeholders that attend our meetings. Our attendance of TCCs and NPCs and four observation reports were submitted to the DOT, highlighting the effectiveness of the respective PCC meetings in addressing issues raised by the port users, including areas for strengthening oversight on the authority. We facilitated consultations on port tariff incentive program with government departments, and that process is still running this year and being finalized. A new methodology called DR, which is it's a methodology for developing an efficiency frontier and determining efficiency of South Africa's terminals against a sample of other ports was implemented. It was compared to, we were compared to ports of Rotterdam, Shanghai, Brisbane, Charleston, Dar es Salaam, Mombasa, and a whole host of others, including Mauritius and Morocco and others. So this methodology was used in actually producing the performance benchmarking report, which is on our website. So DR stands for actually data and development analysis for those who are interested. The next page just gives an idea of the different roadshows that were assessed within that score of around 80%. And these are all scores out of 5. So that's just, you know, data for how the public assessed our work. And we think it's important that we don't just come and talk to you about how good we are, but that the public itself must have an independent assessment of whether we are doing our work or not. The last thing on summary of achievements is the economic regulation section. As we said earlier on, the second multi-year tariff methodology for the South African port system was published, and it included for the first time a performance component, which we call WEGO. WEGO stands for Weighted Efficiency Gains on Operations. So this system basically incentivizes the National Ports Authority. For a 10% improvement, for example, we give them a little bit more profit at the level of 5%, and different grades in between, if 1 year's performance is better than the next year's performance. If in fact the performance goes down, we do the opposite thing. We reduce their profits accordingly. So this is now a new system within the methodology to push them in the right direction, as it were, so that we have greater efficiencies and greater performance within our port system. The industry really, I mean, remember we take these things to be consulted with the industry as well as the National Ports Authority, and both the National Ports Authority and industry were very much in favor of having such a system that makes sure that South African port efficiency is enhanced. The 2016-17 tariff determination was completed. The ROD, or Record of Decision, as I said, was published on 1st of December. That ROD was a slightly below inflation increase, 5.97%. The fifth iteration of the annual Global Port Pricing Comparator Study was published, as I've said before. Port Tariff Incentive Program was consulted and published for comment. Asset valuation, a sample of National Ports Authority assets was valued for the first time, and that project work was completed, and that now basically tells us which way to move to create a full asset valuation methodology. So the first phase, which is the valuing of the sample of assets, has been done, and we are now in the process of doing an asset valuation methodology. The next page from economic regulation, it leads on from there. It says what has been our external impact in 2016-17. On the right-hand side, you'll find a box of each tariff year, what the National Ports Authority has applied for. And the ROD is basically our record of decision, the Ports Authority's record of decision as an increase what was given, and the last column there compares that with inflation. You'll see most of the time we have actually, compared to what they've asked for and what we've allowed, it has been in line or below inflation most of the time. So the graph below that also gives you, I think, looking a little bit faint, but the blue one is what was requested. The gray line is what was given, and the green line going across is basically what inflation did in each of those years. So basically, yeah, the record of decision last year, if you look at the text, it was 5.7 average tariff increase, which was below inflation. It was in support of South Africa's competitiveness within a deteriorating economic climate, following a 0% average tariff in a previous year. On beneficiation support, we've increased export support for fully beneficiated goods in containers. So if you talk beneficiation, fully beneficiated goods are normally exported in containers. So what we've done is that cargo dues for containers are 70% lower for an export container than for an import container. So we're actually incentivizing South Africans who are manufacturing things for export to have a lower price than that of the imported containers. We did an incentive for ships registered in South Africa, so on the South African flag, 30% discount on marine tariffs for ships registered in 2016-17, 20% in 2017-18, and 10% in 2018-19. I must say, although the incentive was there, the take-up rose to about a level of 4 ships, but it hasn't proceeded beyond that. So we will relook at the actual incentive in future years. Okay, I wasn't there in that year, but but there was a big adjustment that was made in that year. And I think it related to the billion rand that was allowed as a once-off payment to cargo owners. And that was because there was so much excess, I assume, that within the calculation, that it was a large drop. I can't tell you all the details of that. I wasn't actually there. But it was a large decrease, and it was a major adjustment. If you look at the graph on the next page, you'll actually see that that drop. If you look at the green line, the tariff then suddenly takes a drop and then picks up slowly again. But revenues didn't drop. You can see the revenue line is the red line. So the revenue of the NPA was still increased by still giving that drop. It depends on volumes. If the shipping volumes are large, then the money would come in, but you don't need to give a very large increase. In fact, you can give a decrease. So I think maybe that's a good thing to look at that graph, that inflation is the blue line, and that's the inflation trend has been 5.7% average annual growth. The tariff line is a lower, the tariff increases, so as a percentage of increase, it's a lower percentage increase than inflation. But in essence, the revenue of the National Ports Authority has been kept stable and rising. So you don't have to give large increases, depending on the situation. You can give decreases or lower increases, but still ensure that the authority is sustainable and can do the job it needs. That's what we've tried to do well. I think I've spoken about the WIGO and the new methodology, and we've explained the graph. So from an organizational point of view, although we've been doing this work that has impacted well on the economy, you can see our organogram is a fairly small organization. We have many posts that we have not managed to fill as yet at the executive level. So, you know, we leave that with you, and of course we will talk about that in later slides, and you can refer back to that. So, for example, we don't have an executive for economic regulation. We have a manager at the moment. We don't have an executive manager for industry development. We just have a manager. So the only two executives besides myself in the organization is the executive legal and the CFO. And below that structure, there are also other unfunded posts. All the ones that are not colored are unfunded and unfilled. But I think the CFO take you through the finances and talk about the audit, and then we can come back to the issue of our challenges and conclude on that.
Thanks, Mahesh. Thanks, members. Just to take you through on the finances, if you look at slide 21, it shows that we operate on a very small budget if you look at what we need to deliver. If you were to look at the NPA being a we regulate, I mean, we work with a lot of data. Just give you a picture with reference to the organogram. We have a team of about 3 employees who must do a tariff assessment. And the amount of work that needs to be done, I mean, you would need probably 3 times the number of people to live on there. So we try to make do with the issue that we have. So if you look at our budget at the moment, it is just below 30 million. It's one of the areas where, as we spoke earlier, that we want to do amendments to our national post act, so we can be able to generate more revenue. Because the first time when we presented the funding model in 2015 to the minister at the AGM, the number that we used at the time, I think we're going to be able to get about 30 million rand in 2015. Obviously, if that has to be done now, we'll probably be in the region of about 50 million rand. And obviously, this will allow us to fill all the white posts on the ground camp, and then we can be able to better deliver on our strategy. So when the department submits the amendments into the Act, we'll then request the support of the committee, because at the moment, the way things are, we're not even able to appoint someone at like an entry-level position. That's how the situation is. And I'm sure as members did see when the minister the midterm budget, I mean, it's quite clear that there's been no baseline increase on transfers to entities. We were fortunate that the National Treasury did approve our retention of surplus funds, but the problem is it's only about 14 million rand on our reserves. And we cannot, I mean, continue on reserve because it's not sustainable. We can't appoint employees on reserve. So if you look at the next slide, slide 22, it basically tells you the budget for the minimum term. And as I said, at this point, only we have 17 employees, and we will try to continue on that. But it's a bit difficult because the new strat plan and APP for this year going forward, it has quite a lot of new KPIs that we need to deliver on. And it becomes quite an issue where you have, like I said, on the, for example, on tribunal and industry development, you find that one person, in fact, has two jobs of about two to three people. So, I mean, for us, we're really having challenges, but we're doing the best that we could. Now, also having said that, even though it's a small part, but we managed to keep it clean, like we said that we've received clean audits from the AG for a third time in a row. And just to highlight a bit, for most entities, you find that they've got findings on non-compliance, SM, etc., even though they're not material, they sort of get clean audits. For us, we did not have findings on compliance, and we did not have findings on SCM. So the only fund that was not material was on assets, which was an issue of difference on the interpretation of the GAAP standards. Other than that, AG was happy with our finances and the presentation of the FS. moving along to the next slide. Because of how our budget is made up, two-thirds of the budget goes to compensation of employees. Therefore, the balance is left mainly just for small learning expenses. So it becomes a bit difficult to, like other agencies where they would have programs in terms of youth empowerment, as well as bursaries, women empowerment, and all those projects. For us, we're not able to do that because, I mean, we cannot clearly put aside the system. Some of them to say, listen, this one is only for business owned by youth, business owned by women, etc. So we, at this point in time, although we try to achieve our BE targets, obviously using the CSD, we try to look for those instances, the BE scorecard, or BE rating, I mean, of two. And then going forward, then what we rather do is we try to train rather our internal staff, because when it comes to filling our posts, we always find an issue that you will not find someone that will 100% meet the requirements of the position. So we're trying our best to train our internal staff so they can increase our understanding of their expected output. So like I said, we don't have any bursary, we just do scholarship for our employees. And then we also have internships. Normally, on the industry development as well as regulation, the staff that works in those two departments, They came in about 5 years back as interns. So we always try to get interns where we can train them from the start, but by the time they get, they go up the ladder in the organogram, they understand the dynamics of our business processes, because when you go out to appoint a person at a higher level in the organogram, it becomes difficult to find, because the private sector pays very high salaries, and for us as a government, I think all know that it's always difficult where we must compete with the private sector. So that's why we always try to get interns every year where they can learn our business and they can grow up together in the organization.
Thank
thanks. I think I'll just cover the challenges and the conclusion and then address any questions. So one of the challenges is that we had a 6 million rand drop in budget between the last year and the current year. So it was over 20%. And that's because of once-off funding, which then, of course, could not be used to employ staff because you can't use once-off funding. You can only use baseline funding. So we said that additional baseline funding is required to employ more staff and capacitate the regulator, as once-off additions can't be committed for recurrent expenditure items. So the current funding was not sufficient to complete the organogram, which consists only of 27 posts, to fully discharge a mandate. So two key executive-level posts were unfunded in economic regulation and industry development. But despite the limited staff capacity as a result of low budget, the regulator has done its best. However, the sort of 2 to 3 people that we have in each department may result in delays in the future in doing work. Because if someone gets sick, it's like, you know, half of your section is gone. So, it does then present a risk of unreliable service to our stakeholders, which we've been trying our best. And you can see from the scores that they've been giving us that, you know, the regulator is regarded very highly. So I think to pick up the point again, amendments to the Act are required in order to give the regulator increased powers as well as resources in order to honor its mandate through the proposed funding model, which I spoke about, which will reduce fiscal reliance and reliance on the DOT's budget itself. Now, we often get legal reviews or challenges to the regulator, and that requires a larger financial reserve set aside in order to buffer against potentially large legal costs. So this is what we prefer to keep a reserve for, rather than use the reserve in the course of business, but sometimes we would be forced to use that. Resignation of members, we would appreciate additional regulator members within usually the legal profession that assists us within the eliminating of tribunal backlogs, and a commensurate support budget is required then as you add members to offset greater costs of travel, stipends, etc. So this is a plea as well to the department to address the, you know, some of the members that have resigned. As Tato said earlier on, we had 12 members, we're down to 9 now, so we should maybe, it requires an advert from the department to actually advertise for members, because it is set out in an act as quite a public process. So the tenure of the current regulator's members, and this is addressing governance, will expire on the 31st of August 2018, and of course we propose that the DOT start early to ensure that governance as a whole is not affected. I think in conclusion, let me say that many important initiatives are being undertaken, like the development of the Port Tariff Incentive Program, the development of the regulatory asset valuation methodology, the implementation of the operational efficiency incentive as part of the tariff setting process, the thing that I spoke about earlier on, weighted efficiency gain from operations WIGO. And in the years ahead, the regulator intends to expand its role in transformation and BBB participation of the sector, the analysis of lease and rental pricing in the port system, greater scrutiny and prudency assessment of capital investments of the National Ports Authority, and the development of an asset valuation methodology arising out of the sample of that was valued of National Ports Authority assets. All these issues will be attended to whilst we still continue our ongoing analytical tribunal as well as compliance work and the research on pricing and performance, etc., that we've done already. We hope to be able to enhance the capacity of the regulator as required by National Development Plan for all economic regulators to fill key unfunded posts and to strive to retain the skills we have assembled as greater financial resources become available. And I think with that, I thank you all.
Thank you very much for the presentation. But also, when I look at the book itself, what I like best is something that the committee secretary, when we write to the entities, there's a section there that deals with the, in the book that deals with the King IV on corporate governance. I really like it, you know, it reports on all the principles, whether they have been applied, most of them have been adhered to. There would be, I think there are two that were partially applied. It is in this book, members, if you have a chance to go through this book. I was very impressed you know, with this King IV on corporate governance, what the entity is doing with regard to applying those principles. Perhaps you could also, in your entity, the Department of Transport, encourage them as well in their annual reports to report on King IV as well. Is it King III? Yeah? Oh, but in your, it says King IV, yeah. King III, sorry. Yeah. Yeah. You see, you can encourage your entities as well. And members, I'll give you now chance to ask questions. Honorable Faba, Honorable Makua. Yeah. The two so far. Why are you pushing him to ask a question?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, my honourable friend and co-member next to me is saying to me from Mpumalanga, they don't have any office in those areas. So I can invite you to the Northern Cape where we'll have a huge corridor on the west coast one of these days. Hugest province in the country. Okay. Chairperson, no. Thank you for the presentation. I'm a bit worried about our competitiveness, and I'll tell you why. If you fly as we fly every week, going to constituencies, etc., you see that the Namibian authority has been pushing Walvis Bay quite a lot. Now, I've done some research on that, and they are really trying to get to the... They are actually saying Walvis Bay aims to become the new hub for SADC import and export by 2019. And the competitiveness in pricing is apparently much better than ours. They also say that the route of trade into Africa is a quicker solution, especially to Gauteng, than what we can do from even the East Coast and from Cape Town. Now, you know, they just invested $4.3 billion in their port on container terminals. And I would like to know what we will do, because you know, we should not wait till we see, wow, what's happening here. And all of a sudden, Walvis Bay on the west coast is doing business, and Cape Town and Port Elizabeth, Kauha, and we are starting to lose out. We also know that on a dry dock, when we were doing oversight on the west coast near Saldanha Bay, it was said to us that especially with the oil drills, etc., on the reparations, etc., the dry docks, the ships have to go long distances. And in those areas, we must look at things like this. Now, apparently, Walvis Bay has got a dry dock, and they're trying to get all these west coasts up to Nigeria. They're trying to get into that market. And I need to understand, to be competitive and to be able to position ourselves to do business, and not lose the business that we currently have, but actually increase it, especially when we've got the slow growth rate at the moment. What is your plan? Thank you.
Department departments and so on. I don't believe we're using it to its maximum. If we go to to other countries, you know, they're really utilizing this and it's working. Computers, really, they assist us. They fascinate me as well. You also mentioned on page 8 that you were doing a research, a comparative research, and you mentioned how do we compare with other countries. Give me an idea, how are we doing there on both fronts? I think there's two researches that we did on that page. Thank you very much.
Just want to check if there are any other questions so that we don't have another round. Not questions there. You know, you clarify as part of the... I'll give you a chance also to clarify. But now I just want the questions from members so that we don't have a second... from my side, I just wanted to check with regard to the project, okay, let me allow you to focus on how you respond. No, I just wanted to check on the projects that have been affected by the fact that your budget is low. You list the projects that you could not embark upon. The second part is on the amendment. Legislation. I don't know if there are any other amendments other than the one that refers to the budget, but it will be very difficult to just come with one amendment. Perhaps you have should have a list of other amendments that you must be doing. I'm a bit worried also about the you know, when you bring amendments here in Parliament, it takes forever to actually have it as a law. I'm worried about that aspect. And I wonder if the amendment should not be also drafted to such an extent that in future you don't find yourself in a similar situation. So that the arrangement should just be between yourself, the Department of Transport, and Treasury on matters such as this, so that you don't have to require this long process of amendment. So if you could just respond then on the question that perhaps, I don't know if, let me start with you because I see you pitching.
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted to pick up the last question the Honourable asked about the safety. Were you talking about the safety of people that are living on the coast or the people that are on board the vessel? Charging. So we are moving towards cost-reflective tariffs, so there must be all our tariffs for different users and different categories of fuels should at least be cost reflective of what we put in the ground as a country. And then on top of that, there should be some return, preferably not extremely high, because it is owned by the state. And so that's what we're looking at. And what are our needs going forward, and how do we put infrastructure in capacity in ahead of demand, how far ahead of demand, etc., because you don't want to build white elephants on the one hand. On the other hand, you don't want to build something that's extremely expensive for no real return to the economy as such, you know, practical use. So, look, the Continental Ports study is being done. We would not, you know, want to see Namibia fail. We would like to see them succeed. And we would like them, you know, if it opens up another corridor to Gauteng, I think it would be useful. We've done that previously as a country. For Maputo, we built the Maputo corridor to lead to their port, to allow Maputo to succeed as well. But it's useful for South Africans as another avenue to either import or export goods. So I think that one, the competitiveness of South Africa is crucial to what we do. We're very serious about it, but we don't want to see our neighbors go down in that process. We want everyone to succeed.
Just on a matter of clarity, and that is that we do represent our provinces here, and not so much political parties or the country, obviously the country as such, but we are specifically looking after our provinces, and this is what was my worry, because I'm from the Northern Cape, and I know we've got some interest in our own west coast on the northern part, which is quite close to the Namibian borders, and for that reason I was asking, for us to become competitive, and then also what the chance was for the Northern Cape to get involved.
If I have to follow up on that, the Northern Cape, I think we'd be guided by the department on that, because at the moment it's not part of the key commercial ports in the country. Remember, the port regulator has got nothing to do with fishing harbors or anything. Okay.
Yes, thanks, Chair. Coincidentally, Honorable, we had our scheduled meeting last week in Durban with the Northern Cape government, because we are looking at the Bokobai as a new port. So there's a steering committee between ourselves as a department, the authority, as well as the provincial government. Because the Northern Cape has a strong case. Most of the iron ore and manganese that goes through the port of Saldanha comes from the Northern Cape. Absolutely. So it's also we need to look at the impact that it will have if you cut that supply chain from the Northern Cape. So it's a process that we are taking very seriously as a department, and then we will definitely look at that issue. But secondly, the competitiveness or lack of in the port system is created by our National Ports Act for not implementing National Ports Act in full. You've got a situation whereby the port regulator is economically regulating an entity that generates more than 14 billion rand in revenue and the profit of, what, 5 billion Mahesh? And in terms of the structure of the National Ports Authority, it sits with the Transnet as a group. So you've got a situation whereby the port users of the port system are paying for the infrastructure and the new infrastructure and the maintenance of the infrastructure on one side. And then on the other side, they expect the authority to come back and invest in the port system so that we remain or we are competitive as a port system, including the building of the new dugout port, including the building of the Bokobai port, if we arrive to that conclusion. So the challenge is the authority will generate this money from this sector, and it goes to the Transnet Group. And then the Transnet Group will then determine whether that money comes back to the port system or it goes to rail or it goes to the pipeline infrastructure. In that process, then you disadvantage the very same sector that is contributing to the development and maintenance of the infrastructure. And the solution to this, you need to corporatize the National Ports Authority so that it is an independent body that runs the oversight of the port system of this country. Up until we do that, then we'll definitely have these challenges of being uncompetitive, because we don't think we are competitive as a port system. But we've got the levers to make sure that as a country we are competitive. It's a structural challenge that will require intervention so that we get to a point whereby we are able to protect the revenue that emanates from that sector.
Sorry, I think the Honorable Makuwe, you want to?
Thank you so much, Mahesh, and thank you so much, Chair, and Honorable Makuwe. I think it's our Makuwe, not Makuwe, sorry, sir. I'm speaking prophetically. it's our common good and our common appreciation of the issues of security. We all share the same sentiments, and we all would love to see our port system and our oceans being used for the good that they're supposed to be used for, not to address, be receiving illicit goods or goods that have been incorrectly declared. Our mandate is around issues of port regulation, and we do not really get into issues of safety. Safety is a mandate of SAMHSA. However, as a player in the industry, if we address issues of illicit goods, it affects on our on the revenue. It affects on the issue of our fiscus in the whole bigger picture. We do have a number of engagements or stakeholder engagements where they are sitting and addressing issues of security, and I think we are participating in that, Mahesh. So we are participating indirectly, not directly as the port regulator. And I would sit here and say we would love to drive out the issue of misdeclarations as well as the issues of illicit goods coming to our country. You also address the issues of fisheries. Again, we are only dealing with the port. We are not dealing with issues of fisheries. I think SAMHSA in a very limited scope will deal with that area, but I think this is the issue of environmental affairs. So I would hate to take somebody's mandate and try and respond to it. I would love to respond to the chairperson's question around the issue of the amendments. We set as the regulator to look at the Act. We have a number of challenges that we are facing when it comes to the implementation of our mandate. I think one of them was just highlighted by our colleague and our shareholder representative, Umtunzi, that is we are currently sitting with an Act or with a situation where one of our stakeholders, Ultravirus, is acting beyond the powers because they or our act is beyond the powers because they haven't been corporatized. So we looked at the act in its entirety. The second issue that we are having huge challenges is we are currently regulating the National Ports Authority. We are not regulating the entire industry. So you will find that in an instance like Transnet, they are the referees as well as the players. The Port Authority is a regulator of the port sector by virtue of the fact that they are the landlord. And we would determine their tariffs for the year, and then their sister company, which is Transnet Port Terminals, there is no one regulating their tariffs. So if we give them 5% this year, they might be able to recover whatever. Probably they had asked for 10% and we give them 5%, they might be able to recover it via the port terminals. So this is one area that we were trying to address to ensure that there is parity across the entire system. When we address issues of BEE, we only address it with the port authority, not with the industry. And this year we were focusing squarely on one of our mandates being equity of access, where we were trying to check as to how are we progressing in terms of bringing in the previously disadvantaged into the sector. And we noted that we are really not making an impact as a sector whatsoever. And that is the one area that I would really love to leave this sector having been able to achieve, to ensure that we change the complexion, but also we ensure that South Africans are participating in their own ports. If you look at the mix-up of who is currently having a huge chunk, I'll say without qualms, mainly foreign companies that are acting in our port system. So this is really one of the areas that we were trying to address. However, when we send them to the department, they return them with a number of areas of clarity. We have been able to sit down to clarify that, and we are seeking an appointment with the department. If it was our own doing as the regulator, we would love to have the overhaul of the National Ports Authority so that we have proper regulation of the industry. Therefore, we'll be addressing issues of competitiveness, we'll be addressing issues of growth, and we'll be addressing the issues of inclusivity in the industry as a whole. Thank you, Chair.
If I may proceed. I think there was a question on... Yeah, I think the Honorable Makuwe, she has touched on it, but there is, for example, the NRCS, which looks at compliance of goods when it comes to the port. So besides SARS itself and those things, NRCS looks at what was specified in the container and whether in fact it is according to its specification. ITAC and others, yes. So there are, and then there's MRLF and others in the fishing industry and marine resources, living fund or living resources fund that looks at those sorts of things. So it isn't something that our act itself mandates us to do as such. So we don't have that kind of inspectorate facility. We've got a few people performing economic regulation rather than an inspectorate that's on the ground, that's policemen of the seas, as it were. SAMHSA far more plays that role in terms of whether a ship is capable of carrying those loads and going onto the ocean, etc., than the environmental people in terms of poaching and things like that. The next question came from, I only heard the Honorable Doc, I'm not sure. Dr. Varda, okay, thank you. The Honorable Dr. Varda, the IT that we have is fairly rudimentary IT system. It's there is no IT system in the world where you put in the information, press the button, and it gives you what the tariff increase should be in a particular year. So it's all in-house developed. So we develop our own IT sort of spreadsheets and other ways to actually get to what the calculations should be, what the volume trends are going to be, all sorts of calculations. And so, of course, if the methodology changed, we need, and we change the methodology, we introduce new things, we have to then recraft what we've done in our IT. But essentially, our IT system is very rudimentary, and what we speak about here in this is about the fact that we've now got in place IT policies, new computers for those that needed it, etc. So it's not complex IT systems. The National Ports Authority is investing in what they call the smart ports concept. So they're trying to go from, you know, the sort of paper approach to have making, you know, online kinds of invoicing, etc. So in their situation, being a 12 to 13 billion rand company, they can do those sorts of things. We're not in that league as such. Yes, the studies, I'm coming to the studies. So the comparative research we've done deals, like I said, was a comparison of pricing, so tariffs with a global sample, as well as the performance. Both those studies, well, I think on the tariff side, the first iteration is on the side. So we've started off, for example, of containers being about 800% higher than the average of the sample, the global sample, of higher prices. Over the years, we use this actually as a method to see how our interventions are working. So over the years, that's come down now, right? For example, automotive, so in other words, to export or import a vehicle, was also in that range, about 600-700% above the global sample average of the sample that we had. And it's now, I think, down to about 100% more. What we've published is base rates to where will that price be over the 10-year period in which we say we are going to reform these prices. Right? So the tariff strategy outlines how we will reform these prices over a 10-year period. So now we are already publishing base rates as to where they will be in comparison was today. If that 10 years time came today, what would those prices be? There are other prices that are lower. Our shipping prices, for example, are lower than other countries. So the price that we charge for port use, etc., the marine charges, as it were. Prices on coal exports, etc., are much lower than other parts of the world. So what we do then is, you will see in our record of decision in each year, we have started a process by which we differentiate the price announced, right? So we will announce a global or an average price increase. So like I said, in that previous year it was 5.97%, but then the price for shipping would be more, the price for containers might be less, etc., but that's the average price. So we then differentiate these prices in a way in which we move towards where we would like to be in 10 years' time. So this is the approach that we take in the pricing. So it's not one price fits all, but an approach that's a differentiated price. So those that are too high, we bring them down. Those that are too low, we pick them up and we get to the average. So that's the approach that we take at this point in time. I think we've covered all of it. Thank you, Chairman.
The project that you could not implement?
The projects, we've actually implemented all the projects that we had to the best of our ability. I think at this stage, as the CFO has alluded to, everyone has to work like doubly hard to be able to achieve whatever we need to achieve. And our board hasn't been kind to us. They've added more and more things that we need to do. So this is probably why we are saying that we do need a better funding model or more funding to be able to get more people. It's not that we will not do our job and we have let any project slide because of it. In the past, there was evaluation of assets that had to be done externally. So in the 1 year, we did get a one red block because that was unfundable. We didn't have the enough skills to value POTS projects. Very few people in the world know how to assign a value to a breakwater, for example. So we had to get then external people to do it, and they had originally charged, I think, 6 million was the quote for it, the lowest quote, and we didn't have that kind of money. So this is why we said at some stages in the past, those are projects that we could not do. But we redesigned the project, and the later in this financial year, we got a supplier that actually quoted much lower. And of course, Treasury had given us one source funding through the Department of Transport to be able to do the project, and so we managed to do the project. So at this moment, there are no projects here that are not done because of funding. We managed to do everything.
Thanks, Chair. I think as a department, we fully support the amendment of the National Ports Act so that we can be able to give the ports regulator enough money to execute and discharge its responsibility. Because we also feel that there are areas within the port system that have been neglected because of the issues of capacity, especially the real estate of the authority. I think as a country we haven't done justice when you look at the real estate. You'll find that this party is paying a lot of money for rental to use the port system. And you find that the sisters of the port authority within the group of Transnet are not paying any money at all. So there's this imbalance that we want the port regulator to zoom so that we got a better picture and then we fix it. Secondly, on the issue, I think Honorable Faber, the issue of the dry dock in Walvis Bay. Under Marine Transport and Manufacturing Oceans Economy Operation Package, Saldanha was earmarked to build some of the infrastructure to compete for that particular market that the Walvis Bay has captured. There are three projects, I think, in the port of Richards Bay, in the port of Saldanha. One of them is to build a dedicated berth that will focus on the oil rigs, either for maintenance or refurbishment and all the ship repair-related activities. And then we've been, because ideally we would have wanted that infrastructure to be built by the authority so that it becomes a common user infrastructure. Anyone can tap in that infrastructure. But we are not yet successful, although it's a project that must be implemented, not to be debated. We are way behind in terms of that particular infrastructure, and the same infrastructure in the port of Saldanha that is focusing on the ship repair activity. And secondly, the issue that was raised on the vessels, fishing vessels or boats that are coming into our waters and run away. I think there's an association, I think it's called Benguela Current. That is for it's Namibia, Angola, South Africa, and Mozambique. One of the regulations that they are developing is to say
because by law, once the vessel is out of your exclusive economic zone, you can, once it's on the open waters, you cannot arrest it. So they will come and poach in our waters for fishing activities. As soon as they are chased away, they just get out either to the waters of Namibia, and then we can't do anything. So the ministers of transport for all these countries, they've signed an agreement whereby they'll be working hand in hand. If you poach in Namibia, then you run into South African waters, the Namibian or South African authorities will be allowed to arrest you to minimize this issue. So we feel that it is a progressive initiative that has been taken by all these countries along the coast. I think on the issue of the I think yes, I just wanted to cover those two issues. Thank you.
Honorable Mako.
I thought the only person that can run on the water is us.
Okay. Thank you, members. I think this process has taught us something that perhaps when we deal with our own strategic planning session, I think January, February, is that with regard to these entities, first we need to ask ourselves, you know, any of the things. We might not finish them all. We still identify entities that you will be doing oversight on. And perhaps ask ourselves, what is it that we want the entity to brief us on? One. Two, what are other players involved? Those players may not necessarily be within our committee. They may be in other committees. And therefore, we should invite. You know, there's something that I observed that was done by Honorable Joan Farbs. The committee was dealing with the issue of local procurement. In their discussion as a committee, they observed that there were other entities or departments that were not playing ball with regard to the local procurement regulations. She decided to invite those entities and departments, even though they were not part of the committee that she chairs, which is the trade and industry. She invited the Department of Public Enterprises, Transnet, she invited all the other entities that are under public enterprises, also Department of Transport as well. Perhaps it's something that we need to do as well, because I'm just listening to this presentation and the challenges also that even the Department of Transport is raising with regard to the role of Transnet and the public enterprise. So we could be inviting in future PRSA, Transnet, and Department of Public Enterprises, as well as the Department of Transport, so that we deal with these issues once and for all in one meeting. This is just an example, but also perhaps in other areas that we deal with, we should be asking ourselves, who are other players, so that we invite those when we deal. The second part is the one that you were raising, that perhaps in some of these meetings, we should have them at the places where, so that it's not just theoretical information, but we must be able, after the meeting, must be able to see ourselves. Maybe we have a meeting at the harbor. After that, we take a tour, you know, of the harbor itself. But it's a matter that we will have to discuss also with the programming committee, so that in the afternoon we are not required to be part of the plenary sitting of the House. So I think those are some of the matters that we must discuss in the strategic planning session for the next term. Because some of these things is just theory for some of us. But it would be better if we dare ourselves, we invite them. We did this when I was in another committee. We did the annual report of the Department of Environmental Affairs at the Kruger National Park. And then, when they were talking about the poaching, we actually took a helicopter on the very day that we were there. There was a poaching of a rhino. We flew, took about three helicopters. All members went to the actual place where there was this thing. You know, we saw the rhino. They was killed, and the bullet was taken out. You know, so we were able to see. Some of people did not even know how the rhino looks like. So they were, except on the pictures, so they were able to see it there. So I'm saying the point that we're raising, I take it very serious, that it's something that we must also do in future. Have some of these meetings at the places where they are taking place. Yeah. Otherwise, I don't know if you wanted to say something. Oh, you're fine. Otherwise, we'd like to thank you very much for the report. Whilst we look at other programs of the NED, most of the time we are more interested on how you use the money that is given to yourself. We are very happy how you accounted for the money that was given to yourself, but also the predetermined objectives that have been met, the compliance with the laws of the country. Yeah. And also the internal controls that are in place in the NDT. What I wanted to ask the Department of Transport, whether you do have meetings with the entities all in one under one roof from time to time, or you just meet them individually?
Thank you, Chair. The maritime branch that I'm acting DDG for, we've got scheduled meetings with our maritime entities, that is SAMSA and the Post Regulator. Those are periodical meetings where we sit down and share and address the issues. One of the classical examples of working together is the issue of the amendment of the Act. Because we have been working very closely with them using those structures. So with other mode of transport, I would like to believe that they are such, but it's an issue that I will raise through the DG on the ESCOM meeting. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you very much. Let me just give it to the board member to make a closing remark before we
Chairperson, I would like to share our word of gratitude with the Service Committee on Economic and Business Development for extending the invite and assure the committee that we will strive to do our best to ensure that the monies entrusted to us are utilized for what they're supposed to be, and we will do as much as we can. I heard our CEO saying that we are putting much on their table. indeed, we will try and push the issue of the amendment around our revenue model, because it's one of those areas that is going to ensure that we're able to reach as much as we can when it comes to our mandate. But we will also be engaging with the department around the other amendments. So the issue of the amendment of the revenue model is really being pushed to ensure that we are able and we're capable of addressing the mandate of the post regulator at the exclusion of, not necessarily at the exclusion, but with we're trying to prioritize the issue of revenue model. So again, thank you so much to all the honorable members for having us. And we hope next year when we come back, would have done much more than what we would have said we want to do. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. But also thanks also to the department. But just to the department, this issue of notices, if I perceive we should be talking to the DG as well with regard to this. You know, when you go to the website of the Department of Transport, there's an interesting thing that is not done by other departments. They take Parliament seriously. You have, though the problem is that then at some stage they decide just to stop it. They, I saw the program, the NCOP program, there's a section in their website with the program of the NCOP. But when I opened, the last one was, I think, the last term, when now he's a whip of the committee, Bandi, was a chairperson, and it was even called public something service select committee there. So that was the last time that it was updated. So if you you can continue again updating that section of the website, you'll be able to know the programs that deal with the Department of Transport, what, and also its entities, because they will be in the program itself. But I just want to convey that you hear that they should update that with regard to the program of the NCOT. Yeah. But we'll also convey the same message when we meet with the Department of Transport, with the Minister and the DG present, particularly in the APPs next year before the budget vote. Thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you very much, Department of Transport and PRSD. Meeting is adjourned. We'll invite you. Let me just say before I invite you, if there's anything. there's an announcement, members. There's a letter from the Department of Labor to the chairperson of the NCOP. She invites the committee, the two committees, not full, but she's indicating that the chairperson of the NCOP must indicate how many members that should the meeting in Zambia. And the minister is inviting the two committees, NA and NCOP, to also be part of that meeting. But then the chairperson must indicate to us as to how many people should go there to that. The letter is with the chairperson, but you will receive a copy of the letter myself. It's December, I think first, second and third of, which is Saturday and Sunday. We'll be done with the committee meetings, but we'll only be left with the plenary on MTG, yes, which will be on the 5th of December. So it's over the weekend. So we will follow up with the chairperson so that she indicates how many people will be going, and then we'll update you. Thank you very much. Remember, the meeting is adjourned. Yes.
He looked down the road. He was behind the corner of the road. Let me go. Let's transport the view tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
V119?
Yeah, bro.
Thank you. I gotta go. What is the video, man? Classical. Oh. I remember all of them.